Our gospel for today is from the 7th chapter of Luke, verses 36 to 47. One of the Pharisees asked Jesus to eat with him, and he went into the Pharisee's house and took his place at the table. And a woman in the city who was a sinner, having learned that he was eating in the Pharisee's house, brought an alabaster jar of ointment. She stood behind him at his feet, weeping, and began to bathe his feet with her tears and to dry them with her hair. Then she continued kissing his feet and anointing them with the ointment. Now when the Pharisee who had invited him saw it, he said to himself, "If this man were a prophet, he would have known who and what kind of woman this is who is touching him, that she is a sinner." Jesus spoke to him and said to him, "Simon, I have something to say to you." "Teacher," he replied, "speak." A certain creditor had two debtors. One owned 500 denarii and the other 50. When they could not pay, he canceled the debts for both of them. Now which of them will love him more? Simon answered, "I suppose the one for whom he canceled the greater debt." And Jesus said to him, "You have judged rightly." Then, turning toward the woman, he said to Simon, "Do you see this woman? When I entered your house, you gave me no water for my feet, but she has bathed my feet with her tears and dried them with her hair. You gave me no kiss, but from the time I came in, she has not stopped kissing my feet. You did not anoint my head with oil, but she has anointed my feet with ointment. Therefore I tell you, her sins, which were many, have been forgiven. Hence she has shown great love. But the one to whom little is forgiven loves little." The word of the Lord.
This past week I came across a think piece by one of my favorite authors, David Brooks. And he said he needed to do something to distract himself from the tension of the upcoming election. And so he went back and reread one of his favorite authors, Martin Buber. He was a Jewish philosopher and mystic, and his one of his most famous books, I, Thou. Buber pointed out what I guess we all know, but it's always brilliant when somebody makes it that clear. He says, we approach the world in two different basic ways. We're the subject, and we can approach the world as in an I-it relationship, where we look at the world around us as objects to be manipulated, to be controlled, to be used, or we need to approach one another from an I-thou relationship, a relationship of equality, a relationship of interaction and love. And both of these ways of approaching the world are good. An I-it relationship is what makes science possible. Scientists look at the world and see what are the impersonal forces that are holding things together and the cause and effect that goes on, and we don't look at them as personal relationships, do we? This is also how we get manufacturing done, how we get inventions done. We tinker with stuff. We see if we do something, it'll create something else, and we create all the wonderful toys and gadgets and vehicles and everything else that we have. So we can approach the world in an I-it relationship. The trouble is when we carry that relationship over, that approach, into our personal relationships. And we start treating people like objects and like things. It often happens. We start taking each other for granted. We start thinking we can control and manipulate and get our will above everything else, and everybody else is just here to make us happy and all this and that. Family can be taken for granted, and then we get in trouble, don't we? We also sometimes can be tempted to treat God in an I-it relationship. He seems so foreign, so strange. Why isn't he doing what I want him to do in the way that I want him? But we can only approach God in an I-thou relationship, a relationship of love, because that's the only way he approaches us. Jesus experienced this difference in the two ways of approaching life in this story this morning, didn't he? He was invited to this big banquet by the Pharisees, the religious leaders, and they were very much treating him in an I-it relationship. Jesus was this new preacher, this upstart who was popular. He was kind of controversial. They didn't know what to make of him. They were having him there for supper, not because they wanted to enjoy his company, but because they wanted to examine him under a microscope and see where he had his power, and could they tap into that power? Would he be on their side, or would they have to be opposing to him? And the terribleness of their approach to him became so apparent when this other woman wanders into the banquet uninvited, and she starts relating to Jesus in an I thou. The love just literally comes pouring from her as she interacts with Jesus. And it all of a sudden changes the whole dynamic of the room there. Love is the basis of everything. What does John 3:16 say? For God so loved the world that he put all of this into place. If God is about love, Jesus is all about love. Our church needs to be about that as well. And our church is. Our church is doing solid work. How do I know? Well, I want to lift up two things this morning. First of all, this last week we got back the results of that survey that we asked you to take about our church about a month back. We'll be sharing that sometime in the future. The results are very fascinating to look at. But I'll just share a couple highlights of that survey with you today. And the church council spent Friday night and Saturday morning doing some strategic planning based on that. So you'll be seeing and hearing more from that. About 170 people answered the survey, so there was a lot of energy, and that was a wonderful response. Thank you for that. They looked at three areas of the church. The first area was, how does the church connect with God? And that was our highest scoring area. Out of the 170 people that took it, for instance, 160 people said, my spiritual needs are being met by this church. 155 people out of the 170 said, I'm excited about our church's future. So that's a good thing. The second area was connecting with each other, and we fell down a little bit on that. That was our lowest. But still, out of the 170 people, 150 people said, we have a strong sense of belonging here at this church. 149 said, we have a strong sense of commitment to our church here as well. That's incredible. The third area is, how do we connect with the world around us? And this was our second highest. We went up a little bit in this area too. The overwhelming number of people said, our church is a positive force in our community. 155 of the 170 people said, we invite people to come to our church. Excellent. So they looked at generally how people thought our church was doing. 10% said we're kind of struggling. 23% said we're steady. 50% said we're strong and steady. And 15% said we're thriving. That's a good thing. And so they gave an overall score on a scale of 1 to 5. And we had a 4.1. 4.0 is you're just maintaining. 4.3 means you're thriving. So I think that's a good place. We're in a strong place, and with a little tweaking, a little energy, we can make ourselves even better. But our church is doing solid work because of more than that. I know that's from stories, too. As I was thinking for this sermon of examples of how we are doing good work, many images came to my mind, but I thought about a Wednesday night we had a couple weeks ago. After church, we had a little carnival and car bash for our kids. I don't know if any of you got to be there, but it was an incredible thing. We had hundreds of people out here, out on the lawn there. We had a little parachute-type thing, and the kids would hold it around there, and they'd pull it up like that, and, you know, the cloth would go up. And then before it would come down, they would all scramble underneath and let this parachute thing come down on them and hide them all. And there's one little girl, she was so thrilled by that, she couldn't wait to do it again. She'd come popping out from underneath there, can we do it again, can we do it again? And then that long line of young people who are out here in the parking lot waiting to pick up that sledgehammer and take a couple whacks at that old beater of a car out there. Then I was, what came to mind too is our Mexico trip, the mission trip that our young people took. It was so thrilling that when they came back, the staff initially, I said, well, how did it go? And both Grish and Paul said it was the best trip they'd been on, that this was the trip that had most engaged our young people in what ministry was about, and it touched their lives. But it wasn't just the staff. A couple days later, I heard a parent talking about, oh, my kid came back, and what a wonderful experience they'd had. And then we got ourselves to hear the young people talk in their own words about how meaningful this was to their faith life. Our banquet now is, I would say, feeding an average of 500 people a week in our community. 500 meals a week. Another thing came up to me that just struck me is how we are blessed here and the work we are able to do. You may or may not know, there is a pastor shortage right now. People are not going into seminary and being trained for being pastors, and it's going to be a real problem shortly. But two young people from our church right now are training to be in the ministry. Two young people, because of their involvement in our church, found the faith and the challenge to put themselves out there. Dominique McFall has just graduated from seminary. We'll be hearing from her in a couple weeks. And Ben Shire, of course, just started seminary. One final thing that we know our church is doing solid work. In 2015, we had 41 baptisms. 41 families entrusted this church enough to come and say, will you baptize our children and start us out on that journey of faith? And it's all out of love. Out of love, lives and destinies of many people are being helped by our church too. Today is All Saints' Day, a day to remember the faithful from our congregation, the loved ones in our lives who have passed away, and that's a good thing. We remember them not just because they've left an empty spot in our heart, not just because of our deep love for them, but we love them because of the way they have impacted our lives. I look at my life and I realize that faith is such a great gift in my life. I don't know how I could live without it. And I realize I did not get this faith by just going up on some mountaintop and having a religious experience. I got this faith because of the interaction with so many other people. My parents, my godparents, my family, my friends, my colleagues, and also because of you. In fact, in the most enduring and the most frequent way, the lives of the people of this church touch my faith and help it to grow. And it's not just me. I was thinking of a woman from our congregation. She lived a fairly simple life. She had disabilities. But she loved this church, she was faithful in this church, and we didn't realize how faithful she was until she died, and we got a tremendous gift from her in her will. Because of her experience with this church, she trusted this church with her resources to continue to do that for other people in this world. Nothing is more humbling or gratifying than that. And we've been able to do that. We've carefully and strategically used her resources to help people. One of the things that really touched her, especially at the end of her life, was the radio broadcast. So when we had to redo our sound system here for better quality of sound in here, we also included a component in there about so that we could make sure the radio broadcast continued and was a high-quality broadcast. And so we didn't need to come to you for money for that. We were able to use this generous gift in exactly the way that she wanted to continue touching lives in the way that her life had been touched. And if you want to see how a full circle it goes, now my mother, who lives here in Bismarck on Sunday mornings, we can set her alarm clock, and she can listen to this service as well. That's how our church is touching the lives and destinies of many people. So what is there left to say except thank you? Thank you for this incredible generosity. We should say thank you more often. It just seems we get busy, we get focused on the needs and wants all the time. Love is expressed through gratitude and thanks. And year after year after year, you show your trust and love by sharing generously to make sure that all of this is happening around our church. And I cannot tell you how grateful I am, how thankful I am for that. As a church, we have our interesting giving patterns. It's not the normal, and most churches have this kind of giving pattern. You start out the year strong financially, and up until Easter, and then after Easter, during the summer, you know, financially, we kind of go downhill. It picks up a little in the fall, and then we always finish strong at the end of the year. Could we try and even that out? Certainly we could, and maybe this coming year we will. But and electronic giving is one of the ways that that can be helpful. If you just have automatically payments sent here, that just really evens out cash flow for us. You know, these seasonal ups and downs gives our council, any new members on council every year, look at red ink in the summer and start to get real anxious. Our poor financial person, she, I think, gets a few more gray hairs as the summer goes on, wondering what's going to happen. And I always have to say, you know, at the end, we come through. And I am so grateful and so thankful for that. Well, guess what? Now is the time to be intentional about making about our financial stewardship in this church, and that's why we have the annual fall emphasis. We ask at this time for you to do two things. We ask you, for you to look to the future. How will you support this church with your resources in the coming year? And we have a little pledge card for you. And we also ask you to make a gift to make sure that we end this year strong, as we always have in the past. Both of those are so important to us. We sent you a little mailing with a pledge card in it and a little a special envelope to make a special gift at the end of the year. If you don't have those or lost those, there's a little display out there in the lobby about those for that. And next Sunday, we ask you to bring those and put those in the offering plates with us. We'll have a little celebration. We'll have some muffins and some coffee between services. Just a wonderful way to say, again, thank you. So I know that you'll be looking at that and be responding generously. You know, a lot of people puzzle over what is the real motivation, what motivates people to give. And you can come up with many answers with that. One motivation you could go at would be guilt or shame. I could be standing up here shaking my finger at you. I don't think that is very positive or helpful over the long run. A lot of churches nowadays are saying that the motivation to give is more transactional. If you give to God, God is guaranteed he'll give you blessings back, and we call it prosperity gospel, and I think that's more manipulation. I don't think that's being honest with God. The way that is most motivational, the strongest way to motivate people's generosity, is the power of love. Out of love, you have experienced yourself God's blessings, and out of love, you want to share that with others. So on behalf of all the people whose lives you touch, including my own, I cannot thank you enough. Amen.